Hello, everybody. Good evening and welcome to the Fan Experience. We are on episode 3. We started last week. Hope you guys got a chance to check it out. If not, you can catch up after the show is over. Please leave your comments. And today we will be talking about the MLB situation that is unfolding. But first, you know, let me explain, you know, Fan Experience is the podcast that puts the fans behind the podium and under the spotlight. We want to hear from real fans. We want to hear from them about their fan experiences and what got them hooked on their favorite teams. Tonight, we're going to have a special guest, Scott Wolf. Before then, we're going to just get the show started with a little bit of talk on the MLB COVID situation. I just want to touch that the producers of this podcast is Playing the Field, sports fan community, which now has a sports fan dating app available at playthefielddating.com. Sign up now to find your MVP. Use promo code FANEXPERIENCE for extra perks on sign up while the app is still in beta. All right, so everyone is aware of what is going on around the MLB. You cannot be ignorant to what's going on. It's all over the headlines, whether it's sports or, you know, just real life, because, you know, we've been dealing with COVID for 4 months now. So it's in every single newspaper, sports or not. But the Miami Marlins have 17 members COVID positive. And now because the Marlins had it, they were visiting Philadelphia, and they had, out of pure caution, you know, they canceled all the games in Philadelphia, and the Yankees now are going to be moving up their Baltimore series and starting tomorrow instead of doing the 2-2 in Philadelphia that they were supposed to do. All the Phillies games are canceled until Friday now. The Marlins will not be playing until next Monday, and who knows who's even going to take the field come next Monday. I hear they're trying to look for people to sign off the street. And that's also in part because the Nationals decided they don't want to play. They voted not to play this weekend against the Marlins. And I knew this was going to happen. I knew it had something bad was going to happen in Florida. I mean, it's the epicenter of everything that's going on right now. It's the hotspot for COVID, and they didn't have any plan in place. MLB had no plans. And originally the plan was, hey, they were going to play all their games in Florida and Arizona. Well, thank God that they didn't decide to do that. But I do feel that people taking flights and going into hotels and just easy travel, and there's no limitations on any of these players. They can go out to bars. They can go out to restaurants. I get it. They're grown adults, and they want to have fun, but we are still in a pandemic. You know, the country is in a pandemic, and you have to be careful what's going on. You know, it could have been just one person, you know, and it could have infected everybody. You know, that is how this thing spreads, you know, but there has to be some kind of extra level of protection and extra kind of stipulations for these players to abide by if they're going to get this season played. You know, I mean, it's the Marlins, which ironically is one of the worst teams and worst fan bases in the league. So are they trying to sabotage the season? You know, that's the first thing that comes to my mind, because, you know, they don't have fans to begin with. So it was business as usual for them playing their home games anyway. You know, they had the 5 people in the stands like all these other teams are having right now. You know, and I don't know what kind of protocols they need to set forth. You know, and another thing, like, there was a protocol saying, you know, if you're leaning on the, you know, the dugout steps or the dugout balcony, you're supposed to have a towel, you know. And I saw, you know, I mean, I'm a Mets fan, but I was watching the Met game, and Pete Alonso sitting there, you know, just rubbing on the thing, and no towel. You know, Conforto had a towel, you know, which is great. But if you're going to put in these these guidelines, you might have to put out some fines or something. You know, I mean, this is something that's serious, and you know, the fans want this season to go without a hitch. But you know, these players also said they do too. So there's something that has to get figured out. And you know, I'm gonna stop on my rant. I'm gonna push it off to Rick, and I want to hear his thoughts on all of this.
Thank you. Good evening. Good evening to all our viewers and listeners out there. You know, this is something that you know, it just kind of came to a shock, right? The season started. You know, you had the Yankees and the Nationals. You had great baseball over the weekend. You had a walk-off home run. You had the extra innings going on. And then the story comes out today that the Marlins had 17 players and staff get COVID-19. And it begs the question, what were they doing in Philadelphia? Like, what was going on? Were they taking any protocols? Were they going out? I mean, I kind of expected something like this. Like, you expected a couple of guys to get COVID, like Juan Soto, you know, Aroldis Chapman. You expect it here or there, but for a whole team to be diagnosed with COVID-19 is completely unacceptable. And Major League Baseball needs to find out what exactly was going on down there, dude. Were these guys going out? Were they partying? Were they not following the protocols? Were they not, you know, practicing social distancing? Like, what is going on? And for the, you know, for the league as a whole, you know, it begs the question, are they going to be able to finish the season? I mean, this was one team. It derailed. Think about what it did. It derailed the Yankees' plans. It derailed the Phillies' plans. The Nationals now voted not to go down to Miami over there. You have other teams that are going to play the Marlins. I mean, what's going to happen to those schedules? I mean, it's a tremendous domino effect. And for this to happen a weekend into the baseball season when it starts is completely, completely unacceptable. And Manfred said it today. He said the season is not in jeopardy. But you got to be honest with yourself. After this happened, you got to ask yourself, are they going to be able to finish 60 games without another team getting sick? Hopefully this is a one-off. Hopefully this what happened here was sort of, you know, an aberration this particular team, like the Marlins, were not, you know, meeting the protocol standards, or maybe because they're from Miami and they're in Florida and they've been in the hot zone, that's the reason why they got sick. But MLB's got to get to the bottom of it ASAP. They got to find out what's going on. And if they have to – and another thing you mentioned, you're talking about Pete Alonso, for example, not wearing masks. There are a lot of guys you're watching tonight not wearing masks. There are a lot of guys not practicing social distancing. I mean, I know there were some plans about spitting and high-fiving, but some guys aren't worried about that. They're not really thinking about it. And so I think the league has to come down on the team and say, look, you either take this seriously or we're not going to be able to finish the season. So this is it's sad because, you know, we waited all summer for baseball. We finally get baseball. And instead of us coming on here tonight talking about what a great weekend was, the Yankees take 2 or 3, and Ohtani pitched this weekend, and we had the extra innings going on, we're talking about – A Major League Baseball team, and out of all of them, the Miami Marlins, having 17 people with COVID, completely almost derailing the season, and now wondering if we're ever going to finish the season. So, you know, it's something to behold, and we just got to wait looking forward. I mean, they're not going to be able to play till Monday. The Phillies are playing on Friday, and we just got to see how this thing plays out. I mean, is it going to expand? Are more people going to get sick? Are more teams going to get sick? We don't know, and it begs the other question for the rest of the leagues, you know. I mean, it begs the other question is, why didn't the Major League Baseball put these guys in a bubble? I mean, and thank God they didn't put them in Florida in a bubble down there. But why don't they put them in a bubble? I mean, you got them traveling, you got them getting on planes, you got them getting on hotels. I mean, Major League Baseball has to think long and hard and say, maybe we have to, you know, put these guys in a bubble, protect them from themselves, and have this season move on. But we'll see. We'll see what Manfred comes up with. But right now, it's just, it is just hard to believe that this has happened. So. You know, we'll just see how it goes. So right now, you got the Mets playing the Red Sox. We got baseball going on. So far, it looks like it's been contained, but we'll see what the future holds right now.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, they're a Major League Baseball team, but that's only because by default, because they play in Major League Baseball, but they're not actually a. They don't seem like a team. But anyway, I digress. It's so the bubble situation, you know. So the governor of New York just announced today. He wants to open up the MLB to, you know, for all the MLB teams to come and play in New York. You know, obviously we got a lot of land. We got a lot of ballparks in upstate New York. You know, but I feel like that's a step in the right direction. Obviously you can't have, I feel that the East region can probably figure out something where they can all play in New York and all try to stay in, you know, one close vicinity and not have to fly from, you know, Philly to Miami and, you know, from New York you know, to Atlanta or whatever the case is. And, you know, that there should be something, you know, New York takes the East, and, you know, somewhere in the central, you know, they house all the central region, and then some, you know, something out West, you know, just kind of like what the NHL is doing. Not because the NBA is different. They have everybody in one center, and, you know, the NHL has an East and a West, you know, that's what they're doing up there. So, and I hate to say it, but I feel like the same thing needs to happen for the NFL too. They need to change up the schedule. They need to keep it regional. They need to try and keep it to a couple of different stadiums.
But that's going to be tough, man. I mean, if you think about
it. No, of course it's going to be tough, but where are we going to get a season? You know, how is a season going to be played with limited obstructions, you know, and limited risks? You know, that the name of the game is to try and get these games in, you know, for the sake of sports themselves, for the fans, to try and get this country back to normal. You know, I mean, before this, like, it felt like things were starting to get back to normal. Like, you know, life was, you know, feeling pretty normal again. And we were all happy with opening day coming, even though it was July 23rd, you know.
Yeah, but it was here, right? You felt it, yeah, 100%. But, I mean, you know, this is something that baseball should have thought of before they started the season. And they had 4 months from the moment the shutdown happened in March of 16 and states were starting to shut down. They had 4 months to think of this. I mean, they had 4 months to sort of plan this out. If a team was going to get sick, if you know, what do we do if we can't get if we can't get games in? And look at what's happened now. And I'm wondering if this was thought through at all. But the idea, here's the thing: the idea that you're going to bring them in and you're going to sequester them in upstate New York. I mean, you got 32 teams. I mean, these are professional ball players. I mean, I don't know that that's going to work with these guys. The NBA is different because it's a court. It's you know, it's 16 teams or whatever it is. Their traveling parties aren't that big. It's, you know, it's a 12-man roster. I mean, baseball, you got 30-man roster. You got coaches. You got managers. So it's a little different, and you're trying to play a whole season, whereas the NBA is just trying to finish out their season. So I don't know that that plan is going to work. I mean, can they go regional? Maybe. But look, I mean, the West Coast, California is having problems with COVID. In the South, you have Florida having problems with COVID. I mean, we don't have a real grasp on it. And so I don't know. I mean, I think at this point, you got to play it out, but you got to reinforce these protocols. These guys got to stick to these protocols of social distancing, of not spitting, of not high-fiving. I mean, whatever it takes. But we also got to find out what happened in Philadelphia. I mean, was somebody within the Phillies organization or within Philadelphia sick? I mean, what actually led to this outbreak? Because there's 17 guys to get sick. I mean, something went horribly wrong down there, and they got to get to the bottom of it.
Well, I think somebody was sick. I mean, they were coming from Florida. The pitcher, I think it was the pitcher that was supposed to go on Sunday, ended up testing positive, so they scratched him.
Yeah.
But the damage was already done. Like, he was still mingling with his teammates, and the Phillies, the visiting clubhouse attendant, just tested positive today, you know? So obviously it was in the Marlins. It was in the Marlins clubhouse, and it's a good thing that they called it early, because the Yankees would have went right into that clubhouse, and they called it early up, you know, early on in the day. So they got away from that, but you know, let's not keep our guest waiting for too long. You know, we could talk about this for forever.
Let's bring him on.
Well, we got somebody. We're in Miami, so everyone thinks it's from Florida. Okay, so now joining us is Scott Wolf. He's a sales representative for the Florida Panthers.
Gentlemen,
Scott, how are you?
How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
We're doing good. All things considered, you know, we still have baseball for now. So let's just keep it going. So, Scott, I want to, before we touch on, you know, your career in the sports industry, I just want to touch on a couple things. You know, I know you're a Long Island kid, you know, like myself. Mm-hmm. Why did you grow up rooting for the Red Sox?
Man, it's a story I've definitely told over 1,000 times in my lifetime so far. So My dad growing up, also a Long Island kid, in the 70s, was a teenager, really didn't know. He was like just getting into sports, didn't know who he wanted to root for. He was watching World Series and Super Bowls, and it's always the Yankees and it's always the Steelers during the 70s. And my dad was watching with his friends one day and saw that it was the Yankees versus Red Sox. It was actually the Bucky Dent game. Decided to root for the Red Sox while all of his friends rooted for the Yankees. And just kind of pass it down that way. And then the same thing, one of the Super Bowls in the 70s, Steelers-Cowboys, all of his friends rooting for the Steelers. He chose the Cowboys, and he's stuck with it for about about 40 years now. So it's tough. To explain that my whole life, it's definitely tough.
Yeah, no, it's it's fun. I mean, I'm a Mets fan, as you know, of course. That's how we met. The Red Sox has always been my second favorite team because I just hate the Yankees, unlike this guy over here. Whatchamacallit. So let's talk about 2004, just because I want to get on the Ripken.
So I was, either in third or fourth grade in elementary school. So my memory's a little foggy, but I just remember going into elementary school when the Red Sox were down 3-0 to the Yankees in the ALCS. And I was so embarrassed. I put a sweatshirt over my head just walking into school because I knew I was going to get it one way or another. So, I mean, that was tough. Of course, you know, something happened. Dave Roberts, you know, decided to steal a base. Mariano Rivera, fortunately, couldn't close. And the rest, they say, is history. So that was definitely a fun one. But I was a little too young to really, you know, take for granted and really appreciate that until that 30 for 30, 4 days in October came out. Man, that was a classic. But, yeah, I mean, 2004 definitely is why I became, like, a huge sports fan. You can't write that. Absolutely not. It was amazing.
No, you can't. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Scotty. Greatly appreciated as a Yankee fan. You know, you talk about 2004, you were in grammar school, but as you got older, when did you really start, like, sort of really following the Red Sox, all of a sudden really becoming passionate and really kind of obsessed with the Red Sox as a whole?
Yeah, it was actually the 2007 year with the Red Sox, another world championship, no big deal. That was the best team in baseball that year. It was the year before I went to Fenway for the first time. Fell in love with the sights, the sounds. I was actually on the Jumbotron during the national anthem during the 17th stretch. So it was a picture perfect first time at Fenway. 2006 was really an off year for the team though. But going into the next year, my favorite players growing up, Dustin Pedroia, Jacoby Ellsbury. Surprise, Jacoby Ellsbury is still a person, by the way. Sweeping the Rockies in the World Series, that was actually the first World Series I didn't have to go to sleep before the game actually started. Definitely then with that team. And then, you know, I've always loved sports. Being a Long Island guy, I have to root for some teams. So also a New York Islanders fan. My family and I were season ticket holders growing up. And, it's still really too young to appreciate the playoffs Islanders back in, like, 2002. Fortunate I got to see a couple the past couple of years, but falling in love with the Red Sox just came after my first Fenway experience. I mean, we're really talking about, you know, the fan experience. I mean, it's Fenway Park. It's over 100 years old. There's no, like, outside of probably Wrigley Field, there's nothing quite like it there. And I'll never shy away from the Red Sox, but have become a little bit more of a Mets fan recently outside of the past couple of days watching, you know, Pete Alonso rip bombs into the Green Monster.
It was a good one. Now, you talked about the Islanders there. Tell me about that. Like, how did you get, like, your parents, obviously your dad went to a lot of hockey games. Like, how did you sort of fall into hockey as a whole?
Yeah. From like my first, like my earliest memories, really, I just remember going to Nassau Coliseum. You know, I, of course, am like a fetus at the time, so I wasn't a season ticket holder. sitting, you know, basically, you know, center ice, like the 300s, didn't have to be in glass seats to really, you know, appreciate it. But first couple jerseys were like a Michael Pekka, Alexi Yashin, a Bobby Nystrom. So, you know, I really grew up just bleeding that blue and orange. But hockey, you know, it's the foreign names that really get to me. It's going up to Canada often. That's just, I mean, I've fallen in love with hockey again, but there's just something about baseball that really, you know, gets me. But I mean, really, you got the Islanders, you got the Red Sox, you got the Cowboys and the Knicks. If it wasn't for the Red Sox, I'd have a terrible childhood.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the Knicks. Forget about it. Yeah. And the Cowboys are still too young to have known, you know, yeah, them as a championship team. And, you know, it's probably going to take a little while. Who knows? So, you know, a little backstory on how we met, you know. So Scott here gives me a call a couple years ago to, you know, try and sell me some season tickets for the Mets, you know. And so I went down and, you know, Scott was, you know, you were great, you know. I mean, you weren't just a salesman, you know, like you were, you know, you were a human, you know. It's, you know, that you meet some salesman that's just all about the sale. So, you know, I definitely appreciated that. And that's why, you know, I stayed connected with you. And obviously back then, you know, I told you about playing the field and, you know, you followed it. So I appreciate that from day one. But talk about, you know, getting that call to go and work for the Mets.
Probably one of my favorite days of my life. I was working an unpaid internship at the time. It was my second weekend with the Long Island Ducks. So out in Bethpage, coming right out of college at Florida State, not really knowing what I wanted to do exactly, but of course wanted to work in sports. So my second weekend with the Ducks, I took a sick day, went to a MetLife Stadium for a career fair, you know, applied to like the Jets, the Mets, the Islanders, Rangers, all of them. And the Mets were the only one to give me a call back. And after my interview, they took me into an in-person interview at Citi Field where my office was. And I mean, not only having your office be like a stadium or an arena, but having it at Citi Field, I mean, I'm speechless just thinking about it. You know, it's a cold October afternoon. I'm walking on the warning track thinking like, I might work here someday. Looking at 45,000 empty seats. I mean, I'm kind of goosebumps right now thinking about it. But, you know, being a Red Sox fan and just knowing that, but not only that, but just being like a big baseball fan, I knew the importance the Mets had on, you know, my community. I lived out in Long Island my whole life. And, you know, you're always little brother to the Yankees. So just knowing, you know, Mets fans, don't have to bring up 86 because I wasn't born. I know that's, you know, you got that, you have 2000, you have 2015. But I mean, I think there's no better community of sports fans than Mets fans. So when I got that call that I got the job, I almost fainted, I think. I probably blacked out. I don't really remember what happened. I just said yes. That was a Thursday. I had to quit with the Ducks the next day. And they were like, why are you quitting? You're 2 weeks in. And I'm like, well, I got a job with the New York Mets. And they're like, oh, okay. You're also getting paid. So good luck. And and from that day on, I was on cloud nine.
Yeah. I guess two-part question. If it were the Yankees that would have called, what it would have been like? And what was it like actually, you know, working there and, you know, the Mets as an employer after the surreal season, you know, was over with?
Again, surreal. So to answer your first question, if it was the Yankees, of course I would have said yes. I mean, I'm coming out of college. I'm not going to turn down a job from the Yankees. I'd have to hide my feelings, you know, as a sales representative, but that would have been sublime as well. But I for my second part. Oh, I'm sorry. What was the second part? I couldn't think of working for the Yankees. Like
day-to-day of actually working for the Mets and the Mets as employers.
Super cool. I mean, the amount of flack I've gotten on the phones from the Wilpons, I mean, really good people. I don't work for them. I don't have to say anything about them. But, I mean, day one, you had the whole sales floor just energized. I was in inside sales, so pretty young amongst the reps, but you know, it was energetic, it was lively, and then you had some really cool moments. I would go up, so I was on the third floor at Citi Field, working in our office, and the executive office is on the fourth floor. There were a couple times where, you know, they had the better coffee upstairs, so I'd go upstairs. I'd be holding Jeff Wilpon up as I'm making like something out of like a carrot. He's like, "You're really gonna like hold up right now?" And I'm like, "You should have bought more than one, Jeff. I mean, come on, we're a multi-billion-dollar franchise here." Eating lunch with Brody Van Wagenen sometimes, super cool. Walking down on the main level, sometimes leaving the office, I would talk to Brandon Nimmo. There was a time where Robinson Cano came out of the clubhouse. He was actually just coming off of injury. I'm like, "Robbie has the hamstring." He's like, "Perfect." Next game, tore his quad, so that was great. I mean, you have moments like that, and it's unbelievable. Like, I've actually, like, talked to Mets legends, like an Ed Cranepool or, like, a Cleon Jones.
Awesome.
And awesome. I also had the opportunity to talk to, like, a Brandon Nimmo, a Marcus Stroman when he was acquired. I know this guy's a sore subject, but, you know, some players and some staff would walk through the sales floor sometimes, had a great conversation with Mickey Callaway. For as bad as a manager he was, he is super handsome. Let me tell you, that guy's a good-looking dude. So working with the Mets was, I mean, especially my first job out of college, it was unbelievable. It was so great. If they called me tomorrow, I hope none of my Panthers coworkers listening. If they called me tomorrow, I mean, I would hop back on a plane right now and go up there.
Awesome. Let me ask you this: as an inside sales rep for the Mets, obviously you got to meet a lot of people, players, staff. But let's talk about the fans. I mean, when you would call fans, like, let's say Mike or Al, for example, tell us about the fans. Like, what would their reactions be, you know, when you would call, try to sell tickets? Would they riff on you about the Wilpons? Would they talk about you at the team? Like, give us some of those experiences and those calls you would make with fans.
Of course, you know, it's still sales, so it's not going to be perfect. When it came to talking about the Wilpons, you know, I think I made a joke like, "Boy, if I got a call from one of you guys talking about the Wilpons and like selling the team, if I had a dollar for that every time, like I could probably like own the Mets myself." It was something corny like that. Got a couple laughs, got a couple angry people as well. I mean, it's their passion. You know, it's outside of this season, it's the longest sport to follow. So you're really putting your whole summer into it. So I get it. You know, if the team's not performing, it makes sense. But then there are some moments where you can't please anyone. If they're winning like seven games in a row, which did happen last year, I had this guy in spring training. I'll never forget. I forgot his name. I blocked that part out. But there was a guy who I was calling, and he was like, "Talk to me after spring training if we made some moves." At the time, you're getting Robinson Cano, you're getting Edwin Diaz. You're feeling pretty good about the season. Called him up again. "Hey, we got these two." "Nah, I'm not impressed. Call me after spring training." "Okay, we've got Jed Lowry," also at the time, pretty good. "We got Wilson Ramos." Like, we're getting these pieces, and he's just not, he doesn't care. We're in the middle of the season. We're on a seven-game win streak. Luis Guillorme hits a home run over the Nationals to, like, make us, like, a seven- or eight-game winner. And he's just like, "A lost season anyways, it's too late to like make a comeback." I'm like, "All right, you know what, I'm not gonna call you again." But like, I get it, you know, like Mike kind of said, like I'm a weird sales rep. Like, I know I'm supposed to be selling, but like, I get it, you know. If the team's not what you want, I'm not gonna pressure you into buying. If you got, you know, an awesome app coming up and you're putting a lot of your time and energy into that, yeah, I'll give you my own personal tickets to the game, and like, we'll just talk shop and see if something works out for next year. Like, I'm more in it for creating memories and creating experiences than actually like making commission. And I'm not saying that like as like a, if anyone's watching down from Florida and you want to buy some tickets, like please do. Like I genuinely just like care about, you know, making people happy.
Well, that's awesome, man. That's a great attitude to have. And so, and also take us through like, do like a game night. So you obviously you're an in-south sales rep. When game nights came along, like how would that play out? Would you, you know, would you invite fans in? Would you be all over the stadium? I mean, take fans inside to that sort of, that kind of atmosphere for you when you were working for the Mets.
Yeah, when you're working game days, there's nothing quite like it. Yeah, you're starting your day like anyone else, you know, get in at 8:30, get some coffee, and then you get right to it. But you know a game's coming. Like, a lot of people, like, when they're leaving to go home to work, like, oh, I got the Mets on later on tonight. I walk outside my office and batting practice is going on. You're seeing, like, just players on both sides having catches and, like, talking throughout the day. Like, I would take my lunch break a little longer than usual during game days just to see everyone. And then it's 4 o'clock. You're starting to, like, actually feel like, oh, the game's right around the corner. Like, fans are already pulling up. You're not doing any work. You're just thinking about the game. Batting practice comes, and that's where most of the sales representatives do their work. You're either inviting out prospects and clients, or you're checking in on people that you've sold to make sure that their experiences are going well. And after you, if you're bringing out like a prospect, you have the opportunity to walk them around the stadium before the game, get them excited, bring them on to the field sometimes for batting practice. There was this one great moment I'll never forget. It was the Giants Mets, and I was sitting I was at the time a season ticket holder of mine, and he was talking about like how much he loved the seats. He's so close to the field. Pete Alonso's batting. He rips a foul ball. It's going right towards us. I am like frozen because I'm in work mode, and my client stuck his hand out and actually like it hit his hand and the ball went up. And like I immediately ran back into the office to like watch it on TV, and like you could see me having like a panic attack, being like, "Are you okay?" But really, like outside of like those awesome moments, you're just going up to people, like win or lose, they're having a great time. That when it comes down to it, like your night can be made off a sale. Because if you're putting people in like a certain area and you're saying like, "How do you love these seats? Let's lock it down." Become part of the Mets family, or you just check in on them and they're having a great time regardless if they want to buy or not. I mean, that's what it's really all about. You want to make sure that fans are coming out to the games. You don't want to make sure that, you know, they're spending money on tickets and then they're having a miserable time. That's not why I do it. I'll sometimes look at games still at Citi Field, like from last year, and see like the 300s not sold out. And I'm like, damn, that's so frustrating. Like, it's just moments like that. But yeah, working on game days is the most exciting part of the job. I think it's definitely why people do it. You're working in sports, you're seeing the product not only on the field, but like you're seeing the product of your work of getting butts into seats. And then at the same time, you know, when it's all over, you get to stay there. It's your office. You do some work while everyone's gone. I mean, the hours are tough though. You'll work from like 8:30 to, I mean, thankfully for hockey, you know, there's a certain ending, especially with overtime. But baseball, man, it could go like 15 innings, and you're there from 8:30 in the morning until like midnight. It's tough, but definitely worth it. Definitely worth it.
Yeah, I had a blast. You know, the game that I had that I came down and I met you. You know, it was great. You know, we sat behind home plate. You know, you showed us. You know, showed us where they took batting practice. So that was, there was a lot of cool stuff going on. And, you know, that was a great day. But, you know, let's move on from the Mets for a second. Let's talk about, you know, what you got going on right now. You're over at the Florida Panthers. What has it been like the last 4 months? You know, obviously they shut down. So what exactly have you been up to?
There's something going on right now that, like, I'm not – and what happened in the last 4 months? I'm sorry, that was a terrible joke. It's been super hard. So I graduated from inside sales. I work in group sales now. So that's obviously a group. So it's 10 or more people. And it is a, it you know, when it stopped, it stopped. There was 2 weeks in March going into April where we didn't do a thing. We didn't know what to do. Now it's gotten a little bit better. We're having a little bit more clarity, especially with hockey starting up today, going into the playoffs in a couple days. So right now we're just getting deposits for next year. We're pushing the season back, I think, to December. A lot of it is just gearing up for next year. We have nothing to sell right now. So, you know, as a sales rep, not great. But, you know, as a fan of the sport, I do see a light at the end of the tunnel, especially you guys were talking earlier about like the hub cities, you know, a genius idea, especially going into Canada where cases are next to nothing, it seems like, in comparison to us. But, you know, with Florida, especially this past month of July, it's hard. I've had a couple of coworkers call their clients. Some of their friends and family have sadly passed away. So it's real. I mean, of course it's real, but until like I got that feedback from one of my coworkers, like I didn't really like process it. And it makes you think like, yeah, we're in sales, but is it really worth going out and like selling right now? You know, people have friends and families that are passing away. Yeah, it stinks that we don't get to watch, you know, sports right now, or we don't get to go to the stadium, but, you know, be all end all, people are just losing their lives. But yeah, no, things are definitely turning around, especially this past week. We've had just a little bit more clarity of what's going on. The president of the Panthers hopped on a call with us last Friday to tell us some promising news, especially with the hub cities in Edmonton, Toronto, and then it's guesstimated right now hockey will start again next season in December, so push back a couple months. But it's looking like if things die down a little bit with the cases, that fans will be in the stadium. That's it's a little refreshing to know. But, of course, things have changed.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely – it's been real for the last 4 months. And, you know, the key was the health and safety of everybody, you know, players, fans, you know, everybody – in the country and in the world, you know. So I feel like they waited enough and they put in a good plan, you know, as far as those two hubs up in Canada, which was obviously a lot better off than the United States has been. Yeah. You know, so that was a good move. So, you know, the playoffs start this weekend. And the Panthers play a team that I believe you're familiar with. Without, you know, really going off on your employee, I don't want you to say anything that's going to get you in trouble, but like, where's your head?
I mean, it's kind of beautiful working for a sports team that's not your favorite in that aspect. Like I said, I'm a Red Sox fan, a little bit also of a Mets fan now. I mean, the past couple of games in Fenway right now are just atrocious. if I knew that the 60-game season was going to start with the Orioles kicking our ass, I probably wouldn't have paid too much attention. But, I mean, with the Panthers and Islanders, you got two great teams. They're both young. They both have Stanley Cup-winning coaches. I mean, of the series, like, not even as a Panthers or an Islanders fan, this will probably be one of the better series of the playoffs to start. It's pretty cool. But, like I said... I could joke about it. We have a few actual Islander fans in the office as well. So me and my colleagues there, we kind of call it like a win-win. But of course, I'm rooting for my Panthers more so. I'll make a little bit more money. If we win the cup, I get a ring. No big deal.
Yeah, well, yeah, the ring. The ring definitely sells it there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes sense. It definitely makes sense.
Scotty, let me ask you this. You said you got some Islander fans in your office over there. And I was reading over here that you like to watch the games alone. You don't like to watch it with anybody. So if the Islanders get on a little bit of a run here, are you going to have to break that and say, hey, you know, let's go? I mean, I don't know where you can go and watch the games, right? Obviously, COVID and everything. But are you going to sort of try to break that little superstition bit and maybe hang out with your buddies and watch the game? Or are you going to stick to what works?
If it's the playoffs, I'm watching by myself.
Okay.
That tradition kind of started watching Cowboys playoffs games by myself. And then my dad would come in and start talk to Romo. Like Romo could hear him. I just hate that. I hate that more than anything. Yeah. But if it's someone else, like, I'll do it to Roma, like, he can hear me specifically. Right, but if someone yeah. with me, I just can't have it.
So was your dad talking to you when he fumbled that snap on that field goal to win the game in Seattle? Or
so we had an icebreaker this morning. We do everything virtual still as well here with the staff. Okay. We had an icebreaker of if you could reverse one sporting event in your lifetime, what would it be? And mine was if Romo would not have popcorn hands. You know, I think that year. That was terrible. I'll watch that sometimes because I'm a sicko and I just love to torture myself. That was terrible. I mean, Romo almost ran it in the end zone. Like,
oh my, that close? Close.
Man, that was terrible. Yeah, I mean, it really started, I think it was the 2009 playoffs. We were playing, I think it was Brett Favre and the Vikings at the time. Weird thing to say out loud still. And we got demolished like 44-3 in the playoffs. And I'm like, Dad, I can't watch this with you anymore. Like, I just can't have it. And it kind of started like that. The World Series, I don't like people talking, so I watch it alone. Like, I just like to focus on the game. It's weird. It's probably not going to go over well with, like, relationships in the future if I have a significant other. But for now, in quarantine, I'll watch sports by myself. No big deal. No big deal.
That sounds good. And you talked about, you know, you're also a Knicks fan, so let's quickly touch on that a little bit. Allen Houston, 98 in Miami, that shot. To beat the Heat, was that kind of where it all started for you, or was it the finals a year later when they went?
It was the finals a year later. I was still an infant at the time, but you know you're at the peak of the Knicks there. My uncle had season tickets to the Garden growing up, and I went with my cousin once, and it was the first time I got to witness Allen Houston in person. Incredible. And then for some reason, I latched onto Latrell Sprewell like he was like a God-given talent. But I think I just liked his name. Super like cool rhyming name. And then after David Lee and Stephon Marbury, it kind of fell off a little bit. And then we got Carmelo Anthony. I was like, you know what? I'll give it another shot. Why not? And then, of course, it didn't end well. But, yeah, yeah. Allen Houston, number 20, the GOAT. That was the only time I really like cared about the Knicks outside of the playoffs a couple years ago against the Heat. But yeah, Knicks are a tough subject, man.
yeah, no doubt. But going back to watching games alone, I bet you would have liked to watch the Falcons Patriots Super Bowl alone.
I think most of us would. I think most of us.
But So tell us a little bit about that day.
So it's a beautiful day in Tallahassee, Florida. Still, you know, in school, go Noles. I remember going to a bar with my girlfriend at the time, 28-3. Score sounds familiar. Yeah. This game's boring. Let's just go back to my apartment. We'll watch something else. I apparently have no spine, so I was like, sure. Of course, still scrolling on Twitter. See, I'm like, oh, okay, Patriots scored. That's cool. Still 28-10, 17. Oh, okay, so it's 28-28 now. Hey, can we put the game back on real quick? I feel like I just missed something like historic. So I got to catch overtime, and then I had to watch highlights of the Super Bowl. Super Bowl, I had to watch highlights. I work in sports. I grew up loving sports. I had to watch the Super Bowl on YouTube. Never again. Never again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my wife actually, you know, the Falcons were running away with it, and she's going like, "Ha ha, Tom Brady." You know, she's a Bills fan, so you know, she's like, "Ah, Tom Brady, ha ha." You know, serves you right. You know, finally somebody's going to beat him. I'm like, you don't say that. You don't say that until those zeros pop on that clock. And I said, just stop. Just stop saying that right now. It was too late. It was too late. The damage was done. So yep. I still think it was her, you know, laughing about it that caused the comeback. But obviously that's not the case.
If it was if like the Falcons ended up winning, I probably wouldn't have cared that much that I missed most of it. But it was the fact that another Tom Brady Super Bowl. Like, we're unfortunately witnessing greatness with him.
Yeah.
And I do mean that with the bottom of my heart, unfortunately, because I can't stand him either. but I mean, it's, you're never going to see something like that again for a very long time. It was it's unfortunate.
If ever.
Yeah.
Final one for me. You're working for the Panthers now. Do you see yourself maybe, you know, sticking around for a while and doing something different within sports after this role, or do you see yourself long term in hockey in the Florida Panthers?
Good question. That's something I've been trying to figure out a lot more during this whole COVID and quarantine time. You know, I'm not really sure. I think that I want to work somewhere within like fan relations. Do I love sales? Yeah, but I'm really in it for the fans. I've said that in all my interviews. If I was really in it for the sales, like, I probably wouldn't have cared, like, being on this right now with talking to Mike and talking to you, Rick. Like, I really care about, like, creating those lifelong memories. So something just to make the fans happy wherever it is, whether it's NHL, MLB, NFL, NBA, I'm all for it.
Good for you, man.
Awesome. And, you know, if ever down the line you want a job with a sports fan dating app, you know my number, so give me a call. You know, down at the bottom, you know, you can follow Scott if you want. And Scott, you know, thank you very much for coming on. You know, it was great, you know, catching up. And, you know, best of luck to, you know, the Panthers this weekend. And if it just so happens that the Islanders beat them, well, best of luck to your Islanders.
You know what, don't hate it, but yeah, thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. And I'll talk to you guys soon, all right?
Thank you. Thank you for coming on tonight. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Take it easy.
Scotty Wolf. Good guy, man. Solid guy, man. That was a great interview.
Great guy. You know, like, you know, you just, you know, he called me, you know, to pitch me Mets tickets. And, you know, at that time I was like, huh, okay. You know, and then, you know, originally we were supposed to go on, like, I believe a tour, you know, it was in the off season. And then I think we had to push it back a little bit. And then we went during the season, we went through the, you know, the executive clubs and, you know, right there on field level, you could see them taking batting practice down there through like a window. It was so cool. And then you go right behind home plate and sit there for the end of like batting practice. Mm-hmm. And then we moved over, you know, to like our actual seats, which was, I believe, field level as well. But that's, you know, that's when he went back to his office and it was just me and Jackie, but it was a lot of fun, man. It was really cool. But, you know, we were just talking, you know, and he wasn't trying to like push the sale. And, you know, that's what I liked about him, you know, and that's why I stayed connected with him, because that's the person I want to buy from. You know, I mean, the Panthers, you know, I don't want to buy, you know, Panthers tickets right now, but, you know, but if he was still, I did actually call him and, you know, a year later to buy tickets from the Mets, and, you know, he had moved over to the Panthers. But, you know, and even the contact that he gave me for the Mets, like, the guy was like, not giving me a call back. And I was like, screw this. So I'm like, get Scotty back. yeah. But, you know,
no, but he's a good guy, man. I mean, and listen, that's a tough industry to get into. For him, straight out of college, Long Island Ducks, New York Mets, and now with the Panthers, I mean, it goes to show that he's got a quality in sales that people really like and appreciate. So, you know, I'm rooting for the kid. I hope when we blow up playing the field, I hope you hire him as the head of sales, because that's the kind of guy we need to lead our team and our group and our people moving forward.
Absolutely. You know, I definitely, you know, I'm keeping in touch with him, and for sure, you know, I want big things for him. And if it, you know, just so happens that, you know, paths align again, and, you know, we can try and figure out something like that, I'm all game. So let's touch on some
news notes.
You know, let's, I guess, take a break from the baseball aspect of things. So, you know, obviously the NBA, we've talked about the bubble. We've talked about the bubble in the NBA. And there was a Clippers player that got an excused absence from the bubble. Do we know what the excused absence was for? You know, was there a...
I think, You know what? I think he was excused, I want to say, for a family issue or I don't know if it was a funeral or what it was. But our good buddy Lou Williams decided on his way back that he would get chicken wings at Magic City and mingle with the regular folks out there, and decided to come back and realize, hey, I'm in a bubble and I got to get tested for this stuff. And I got to tell you, man, I mean, as sort of irresponsible as that is, it is a hell of a story, man. I love it. They must have some great chicken wings over there, because, I mean, for you to stop there is amazing. Even Johnny Manziel is saying, hey, the food is good there. So, I mean, I've read that story like 4 or 5 times. It's incredible, man. I just can't get over it. It's great.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And, you know, it crosses my mind. It's like, okay, so they got to quarantine him for COVID, but are they really trying to quarantine him to make sure they didn't have anything else? come in contact with anything else while he was at the Gentleman's Club? You know, now he's at risk.
Yeah, she's got to test him for everything. But
yeah, but that's just it's like, you take the excuse absence and he's like, I'm just going to go to Gentleman's Club. That's it. It's like, okay, all right.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing, man. If you let these guys out of this, man, I mean, it's just mayhem. You know, we go to a strip club. That's great, though. That's a great story.
It is. I mean, it definitely is funny, for sure. You know, yeah. And so did he rat it himself out that he went, or did one of the, was it the hotline that caught him, or somebody, you know, on him?
I don't think it was the hotline. I think somebody saw him there. They took a picture of him there or something like that.
TMZ type of deal, or, you know, some kind of paparazzi.
Somebody took a picture of him or something, or somebody said they saw him there. It wasn't from the hotline, and they let the league know. And he comes back that, like, hey, we got to talk. I mean, it's just, I mean, you can't make a story like this up. I mean, you know, but like, you got to think. And then the best part of it, Kendrick Perkins comes up, and Kendrick Perkins has been in the league for 15 years. Calling him out for being irresponsible, and then Lou Williams comes back on it after 15 years. Oh, you got me eating chicken wings at a strip club. I mean, come on. I mean, that's just, it's just great. Like, now Kendrick Perkins is involved, and it's just, they have memes about this. I mean, it's just, it's great. I love it. I love the drama in the NBA. It's awesome.
Yeah, but still, they still have less COVID cases than MLB goes. So. You know, it's still working. You know, I mean, it's one little transgression. It's not really the end of the world and the end of the league. You know, we'll see what happens with the MLB. But so we talked about it last week. You know, Travis Kelce joining forces with J-Rod to try and buy the Mets. But a Chiefs player now is a part owner of a baseball team, and it's not Travis Kelce. Patrick Mahomes decided to take his $500 million that he just – you know, contract that he just signed and buy a piece of the Royals today.
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard that, I was pretty shocked. But I mean, right now, anything Patrick Mahomes touches, it turns to gold. And it's good for him. I think it's good for the city of, you know, for Kansas City as a whole. And him being an owner just expands his brand. I don't know what exactly his role there is going to be, though. Like, is he going to have any say? Is he going to talk about players? Is he going to, you know, what's his role going to be as part of this ownership group? Or is he going to be a silent owner? But I think this is good for him. I think he wants to, I think he still has a deep love for baseball at the end of the day. And I think he just wants to be part of Major League Baseball. But as far as for Patrick Mahomes goes, his portfolio, I mean, look at the summer this kid's had. He just signed a $503 million contract. Now he's going to be part owner of the Kansas City Royals. I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, this kid's going to be, before 30, he's going to be a billionaire. I mean, he's probably going to be the first billionaire NFL player out there. I mean, and it's just great. I mean, the kid is you know, he is the face of the National Football League, and now he's probably going to be the face of Major League Baseball ownership. So I think it's great for him. It's good. And it's good for these athletes to get involved in stuff like that, which is, you know, brings a little different it brings something different to the ownership groups, going away from the old boys club and now more younger, diverse guys who've been in the sport owning teams. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy for him. You know, I mean, he deserves the, you know, the good things. He's a, you know, he's a good kid, and you know, he's got a bright future ahead of him for sure. And you know, hopefully those, you know, the Chiefs and everything, you know, they can win a couple more. You know, that now that Tom Brady is, you know, close to retiring, you know, maybe they can have that new face that, you know, that can put up a little bit of a run and a little bit of a dynasty of his own. You know, probably not close to the Patriots, probably, but hey, you know, at least
you never know, dude.
Gonna be,
I mean,
it would be tough, though. It would be tough.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough. But that kid, he's just that good, man. He's really good.
Yeah. Oh no, for sure. You know, but it wasn't just Tom Brady winning Super Bowls. You know, he had the defenses and he had the teams around him and he had that coach. You know, I mean, obviously Andy Reid's a great coach. Is he Belichick? You know, I mean, that's a tough call. But while we are, you know, so one of Mahomes' teammates actually opted out of this season. He's actually going to go in and help people in the medical field, which is, you know, which is awesome. You know, it's definitely commendable. But there's a lot of other people that are opting out of the NFL. News coming out today, including 6 New England Patriots. What's your thoughts?
That's you know, it's not surprising. For those, by the way, those of you who don't know, Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Super Bowl MVP. And also, for those of you at home who don't really watch sports, the 6 players, I believe it's Patrick Chung, Dante Hightower, I think
Brandon Bolden.
Right. Vitaly was the other guy. And it was two other guys more. Their names escaped me. But I'm not surprised. Yeah, I'm there. Okay. But look, I'm not surprised, man. I mean, these guys want to be safe. They want to be healthy. They're not sure. I mean, a couple of these guys, you know, just had children. And so they're rightly concerned about bringing COVID-19 into their homes. And I think for the league as a whole, you got to wonder if more guys are going to opt out. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles just had, I believe it was Marquise Brown, who opted out, if I'm not mistaken.
I think Marquise Goodwin opted out, I heard.
Goodwin, he opted out.
Marquise Brown, you know, Hollywood Brown, that's Ravens. I haven't heard anything like that.
But yeah. Marquise Goodwin from the Philadelphia Eagles opted out. And so you just got to ask yourself, are more players going to opt out and decide not to play? I think at the end of the day, they got to do what's best for them and their families. You know, for football as a whole, you don't want to see. But this begs the question, are the New England Patriots still the favorite in the NFC East? I mean, for those of you who don't know, they've won the NFC East, I think, 11 so or 10 out of the last 11 years. I mean, they keep winning. They don't stop. Belichick's the coach. But with all this talent leaving them, I mean, are they going to be able to plug young players in and just keep the machine moving? You got Cam Newton, came over from Carolina to be the starting quarterback, or with Jason Stidham, so we don't know. But I think this trend is going to continue in the league. I think guys are going to opt out, and we'll just see how far it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have the Bills as one of the favorites to dethrone them, especially with this. They also had you know, somebody opt out on their team as well. But, yeah, 6 players on the Patriots, you know, and especially on that defense, which was, you know, first class last year. You know, one of the best defense in the league. So that's definitely going to change the outlook of the AFC East for sure. And I do think that, you know, Buffalo has a shot. You know, it really falls on what Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs can do over there. You know, but they have the talent. If Josh Allen, you know, takes a step up like he's been doing, then I really think that the Bills can take it. I wish I could say that for the Jets. You know, they go like, okay, the Patriots are going to decide to sit their entire team, half their team this year. So Jets, here, come and get it. But no, we still got Gase, so that's not happening.
Well, let's get into it, man.
Opt out?
I don't think Gase can opt out, but I think
it's his health and safety, right?
I don't think he's gonna opt out. That guy isn't going anywhere, at least for this year. But for those of you who don't know or didn't catch that news over the weekend. The New York Jets traded their star safety, Jamal Adams, to the Seattle Seahawks for their 2021 first round and third round pick, their 2022 first round pick, and Bradley McDougal, their safety from the Seahawks. Look, I love the trade. I think this was – it needed to be done. You cannot keep somebody – if somebody doesn't want to be there and they're not happy, you got to get rid of them. And I think you got to give kudos to Joe Douglas. Look, he's trying to just rebuild this thing. I mean, he's literally – he basically bought a house. He said, you know what? This is what I got. I'm going to gut this house. He basically gutted the house, you know, toilets gone, kitchen's out, took out the flooring. Everything's out. And he's like, I got to insulate it. I got to put another deck out there. I got to put the floors in. And that's what he's doing. And what he needs is talent. He realizes his team does not have talent. He's got Sam Darnold. He drafted Denzel Mims. He's got some pieces there with Herndon on the defense side of the ball. He's got Mosley, but he wasn't going to pay a safety who doesn't cover well and who plays in the box. He's not going to pay him $20 million. So you go out there, you get some premium players with some premium picks, and you rebuild that way. And that's what you got to do. You got to get Sam some talent, which I think he's going to do. You got to protect him with another tackle that eventually they're going to get. But this was the move to make, man. I mean, you just can't have him making the season just – it's a constant headache. It's just the same nonsense with this guy. This guy's a meat player. And the Seahawks – listen, there's a sucker everywhere. The Seahawks bit, and the Jets walked away. It was a goldmine. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I love the trade. I think that what we got in return, I feel like it was better than what, you know, the Raiders got for Khalil Mack. You know, and that's saying a lot. And I guess Seattle, I must see something in him, you know, that helps work with their scheme. But, you know, I mean, we got a safety in return. He's not – Bradley McDougal's not, you know, horrible by any stretch of the, you know, of the imagination. But, you know, it's two firsts, you know, and a third. And, you know, just for Jamal Adams and a fourth. You know, I get it. They're probably going to be late first rounds, and I get it why the Seahawks did it, because they're not going to get somebody of that caliber, you know, that early in the draft, because, you know, they're expecting to be, you know, drafting later on in the first round. But, you know, I mean, two firsts and a third. I mean, you know, what's not to like about that? I don't like the whole, you know, let's trade him because he's whining. You know, it's kind of like, you know, my toddler asking for another piece of candy, and I just give in because I just don't want to hear it anymore. But the fact that the return was what it was makes it a little bit, you know, more understandable on why he pulled the trigger when he did. And, you know, Jamal Adams, now he's going to, you know, play on his rookie contract. He's not going to push the Seahawks. He's going to end up with the Cowboys next year. You know, that's where he wants to go. So, that's probably where he's going to end up. I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll extend him halfway through this season, but, you know, good riddance. I mean, that's really it. You know, just if you don't want to be here, just go. And, you know, hopefully McDougal works out. And, you know, he's also leading a charge in trying to get Jadeveon Clowney signed over by the Jets. So, you know, if that happens, you know, I mean, I know he wants a lot of money, but, you know, at this point, you know, he's been out of work this whole time and not getting a deal on the free agent market. So we might be able to get him and scoop him up cheaper than he originally anticipated.
Yeah, I think that was just a Jadeveon Clowney trying to lobby for a contract, to be honest with you. I mean, nobody signed him. Seattle hasn't given him the deal that he wants. And I just think that's him sort of telling the Jets, hey, listen, I'm out here. You know, give me a contract, you know, wherever. Because at this point, you know, there are no takers for this guy. And this guy's a great talent. And the Seattle hasn't offered him the money he has. He thought he was going to get money on the free agent market, and he hasn't gotten it. So I think more than anything, that should – and then for those of fans who don't know who Jadeveon Clowney is, he's the star defensive end for the Seattle Seahawks, who is a free agent now. But the other question I have, just getting back to Jamal Adams real quick, is he's going to go into a division. You got Kyler Murray, Jared Goff, Jimmy Garoppolo, right? And he's going to have to cover some receivers out there in the West that's not going to be easy matchups for him. I mean, you know, yeah, you know, they're trying to recreate the Legion of Boom you know, what they had over there with Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor, what have you. But, you know, with the Jets, he wasn't that great of a cover guy. Now you're asking him to go out there and cover some of these receivers in the West. I mean, I don't know how he's going to fare. You know, this is, you know, for I think for him, it could be a little risky that he gets exposed that way. And then you have to ask yourself, if you're the Seahawks, even if you're the Cowboys, are you going to pay a guy like that $20 million?
Yeah.
And, I don't know that you want to do that. So, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, if, and then just getting back to the Jets, rebuilding the team, that's great. Don't count them out this year, man. I mean, I know a lot of people are saying they're going to be last in the division. They stink. Darnold, the O-line. Remember, New England, they've just – six guys have just opted out, and they don't know what their situation is at quarterback. Miami with Tua, and they're rebuilding their team, and they have a COVID problem down there in Miami, so you don't know how that's going to play out.
Yeah.
Have the Bills who are coming off, you know, Josh Allen coming into his third season. They just signed Stephon Diggs. So we'll see how that kind of plays out. So the NFC, the AFC East right now, it's a little bit of a, it's a little volatile right now. And the Jets can sneak up and get some wins in there. Get, if they get off to a good start and they get some wins in there, who knows what could happen?
No, of course. And I definitely feel like they have the pieces on the team. You know, I just don't have any faith in the coach. So that's really where I'm at with that. But yeah, it is wide open. And it's definitely not a guarantee for the Patriots to, you know, to finish out at the top of that division like they have been, you know, for the last, you know, 12 years or 11, 12 years, whatever the case is.
I just don't mean to cut you off, but this just came over the news. The Bolts extended Joey Bosa 5 years, $135 million. What do you think about that?
I mean, you know, it's a great player, you know, but they're they're still rebuilding as well. But, you know, at least they can lock up Bosa and, you know, see where their team goes. You know, they're a rebuilding team. So, you know, I don't really like their prospects for this year, you know, with the quarterback situation, you know, with Tyrod going to, you know, start half the year and then Herbert, you know, for the other half. I do, you know, I like the Chargers. I'm not going to lie, you know, but I don't really like their outlook for this year. I am curious to see how Rivers does, though, over with the Colts, though. You know, with T.Y., hopefully he could stay healthy and see what he could do. I've always liked Phillip Rivers. So, you know, I definitely, you know, hope that him and his 17 kids can have their own team one day.
Hey, listen, man, I would not be surprised if one of his kids is a quarterback, just like, you know, the man.
Come on. I mean, you can't.
It's going to happen.
I mean, he's got how many chances?
He's got like 9 chances. Great.
The guy wants to build a legacy and go for it, man.
Hey, God bless him.
Well, the Mets are up 8-2 against the Red Sox. Nice
to see. The Mets. Yeah, they're starting to come around a little bit.
Yeah, their bats woke up in Boston.
Yeah. So let's close it out with this. We had a lot of sports going on this weekend. I think that was a great interview with Scotty. In the next couple of days, I think we got to keep an eye out for Major League Baseball. What's going to happen here, man?
Yeah.
I mean, who knows?
But you know how this opt out, you know, because everyone's starting to opt out now, so. Yeah, let's see what happens within the next few days on the NFL front as well. And NBA starts Friday. NHL starts on Saturday. So we'll definitely be touching on that on our next show on Thursday. And we have another great guest in line for Thursday as well. So tune in Thursday night, 9 o'clock Eastern. Same place, YouTube and Facebook. And you know, we will see you then. Until then, signing off. Have a great night, everyone.
Peace, everybody.